Today's program titled Top 10 Tips for Grower Communications, Contracts, and Collections. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. For those of you who are logged into the web presentation, you're encouraged to submit questions throughout the conference by selecting the chat pod located in the lower left corner of your screen, then type and send your question that way. At the end of today's event, a link to an online evaluation will be displayed on your screen. Please take a few minutes to complete it. We do appreciate your feedback. I would now like to introduce our host for today's call, Jess Lyon. You may begin.
Thanks and good afternoon, everybody. And thanks for those who are helping pull together the technology for the webinar. So for those who haven't met me and I haven't met you face-to-face, my name is Jess Lyon. I'm a partner at Davis Wright Tremaine, which is the law firm that represents the Oregon Wine Growers Association. And we also happen to have a good relationship with many of its members and also other wineries and vineyards throughout not only Oregon, but also Washington, California. We're going to be discussing a topic that comes up not infrequently throughout the year, typically on a few key occasions. It comes up sometimes right around the end of the year when folks are working on collections for or payments for grapes that have sold in this most recent vintage. It also comes up tends to come up early in the year as folks are working on new contracts for the following vintage, so vintage 2018, and then also just right, you know, prior or around harvest, sometimes there's questions on things that come up concerning disconnect between growers and wineries. And we have the luxury of working in a industry together where most everybody tries to keep a fairly, you know, good-natured relationship together. And that's a good bit of what this presentation's about. So we're going to go to the first slide. And what I'm going to do is present the top 10 tips, kind of David Letterman style, for those of you who remember David Letterman, kind of working from the bottom to the top about tips for having good relationships between grape growers and wineries. And number one is choose good buyers. If you're a grape grower and if you're a winery, certainly choose good sellers. But the notion is really focus right up front on the folks that you're forming a relationship with. And I'm often surprised, or maybe I should say sometimes disappointed, to find out that some of the worst incidents that we hear about with growers and wineries having a fight over a grape transaction or a dispute over payments or just late payment and the like typically come from situations where the parties didn't know each other particularly well before transacting, or at least planning to transact around sometimes tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands worth of dollars worth of fruit. So it's just important to have your eyes wide open and assess the prospective business relationship. What is the history of the winery, and do they have references from other folks that they've purchased grapes from over the years? With so many new entrants, sometimes new wineries or new owners of wineries and new businesses coming into our state, not everyone has the same history, but it's good to try to make as many of those connections as possible. But just do your diligence on the business and the people responsible for the business, and identify what kind of payment assurances you can get from them, and do they have a good payment reputation. You can even ask to do a credit check to see what the credit score might be on a particular buyer of your grapes. Have some communications other than a quick email or a posting, perhaps on a digital bulletin board about selling grapes, that really see what you can discern from a good conversation together. Become familiar with each other, and then make sure you understand the business realities of those you are going to be transacting with. Is their business healthy at this point? Are they new? Are they deeply experienced? Are they having a hard time selling a lot of their wine? Because typically a hard time selling wine means a hard time paying for grapes. So just do as much diligence, I like to say, on your buyer as you would if you were buying your next pickup truck or big screen TV or home, if that's the volume of grapes you should do. But I'm really surprised sometimes how relatively nonchalant some folks go into these relationships without knowing each other. So spend some time doing your homework. The next item is you just really do want to focus on having some written contract. And it's easy, I think, to hear a lawyer say that and presume that a lawyer is going to drop 20 or 40 pages of legalese on you. And certainly most of us that are lawyers are capable of doing that, but that doesn't necessarily make for a clear contract, and it often doesn't make for the best one. A good contract can be simple and straightforward and overcome the temptation of maybe just doing a transaction on a handshake. So we get asked the question a lot, well, why do we have a written contract? And it's really first to clarify just the business terms to make sure that everybody's on the same page. It also provides just the basic exchange of promises, what each party will be doing, and if it's not there, presumably it's what they won't be doing. A written contract is also really important to provide certain terms that the law won't presume. Now, contract law and the Uniform Commercial Code will presume a lot of things about your transaction if you haven't otherwise agreed to it in writing, but there's some things that it won't kind of fill the gaps on, and we'll get into some of those later. But it's important to address some of those finer points. And then finally, the contract is really important to allocate risk if things go wrong in the vineyard, in the winery, on the delivery of the grapes, what have you, who's responsible, and what's the allocation of risk between the parties. So who is it that prefers clarity and who wants written contracts? It's not just the two parties necessarily, but professionally run organizations. I'm sure you've seen some of the larger wineries in the state, especially looking for more clarity in their contracts. Lenders to vineyards, investors in vineyards and wineries want to see written contracts. Managers who may come in to step into the shoes of existing vineyard managers or general managers need to know what the terms were, clearly, if they have to step in overnight in the event of a planned or unforeseen change in management. Employees who are charged with collecting bills, delivering grapes, they need to know what really the terms are. Folks who might inherit the business, whether it's at the end of an owner's life or a successor to the business who buys your vineyard, they all need to know what the terms are. And then, of course, courts, if they're asked to interpret a difficult situation around a grape contract, they need to they need to know what those terms are too. And ultimately, having a good contract that identifies the relationship and expectations for the relationship, sometimes over many years, can really serve to enhance your business value just because it provides a lot more certainty. We're not going to get into all the terms of the grape purchase and sale agreements today. I've listed here a number of key terms that we see in a lot of the better contracts, and they can be addressed in more or less detail. And there's some tricks to any number of these, but here you can see, being real specific, not only what the premises where the grapes are grown and what is the buyer's access to those premises to come in and check on the condition of the grapes, obviously clarity about which blocks, varieties, and clones may be the source of the fruit that's subject to the contract. Obviously, the duration, the term or duration of the contract, and if there are renewal rights, and what are the terms on renewal for pricing and things like that. That all needs to be addressed. Who's responsible for farming practices and harvest decisions, and if there are any particular farming practices that are to be dictated by the winery, we need to specify that right up front. Are there quality specifications or any particular warranties about the grape that are essential to this deal? Usually there are. Those can often be addressed in just an addendum to the contract, setting out where appropriate some very quantitative specifications and metrics about the fruit when delivered. Pricing obviously really matters, and some clarity here is always important, whether it's a per-ton contract or a per-acre contract, and then what are the adjustments to that for any variation, whether it's during a season or on renewal. Clear terms about who bears the responsibility and cost of delivery, what the point of delivery is, and who's responsible for getting weight receipts and making sure a certified scale is used. We'd like to see contracts include provisions for acceptance and when it's appropriate to reject fruit, and if fruit is to be rejected, are we only rejecting, you know, a bin, or are you ejecting an entire lot or order, and what is the timeliness of that has to occur there? Rejection, in our experience, is usually a last-case, worst-case scenario because there's, you know, typically at the time that the fruit is at the winery door, there's really not any other option or destination for it. Then certainly the payment terms we'll talk about later, whether the contract can be assigned to another winery, and if so, how does that impact delivery, payment assurances, and the like. And then that could even go to successors, owners of the winery. Do you want to be doing with business with someone maybe you don't know today but might own the same winery next year? Those are questions to be asked and answered in the assignment provision. And then finally, the last term that we flag here is it's important to include language concerning the use or not of a vineyard designate that identifies the grower's vineyard by name. Typically, that means the grower is responsible for trademark protection around that name, and it would include use on wine because this, in effect, becomes a sub-brand that's used under license from the vineyard to the winery. All these are some pretty key terms to include. In terms of ongoing relationships, I think one of the most important things is just that the grower and the winery communicate often. There really needs to be a two-way conversation as much as possible with individuals both responsible for the day-to-day and ultimately responsible for the relationship. And as with any relationship, whether it's a business relationship between a vineyard wine grape grower and a winery, or I suppose a personal relationship at home with a loved one, ultimately it's important to avoid surprises. Surprises can create added pressure to any event and sometimes lead parties to assume the worst of each other. So just start by tackling any potential issues early, whether it's an issue that a winery sees, you know, not needing or wanting as much fruit or being able to pay on time, or whether it's a vineyard that believes it has issues maybe with the quality or volume of fruit that they've contracted. Tackle those issues early and don't dodge bad news. I think, again, putting those issues off until the last minute tends to create more drama and more ill will the longer it's put off. It's important then to have straight talk about those problems and for both sides to listen to each other and, you know, be empathetic with the other party, but where there are important, you know, contractual rights or business concerns that you have, it's okay to be firm, but it's important to listen and be empathetic as you can, I think, to the other side, just to avoid, you know, future litigation. And then if it's about payment especially, we say, you know, get organized and have a plan to collect. If it's about an issue with a vineyard or volume or quality issue, again, get organized, have a plan. Don't just present a problem, but suggest a plan for resolving it, again, on either side of these relationships. And then when it comes to difficult conversations, I just think face-to-face, wherever possible, is best. And certainly email or texts are worse. So if you can't do a face-to-face meeting, pick up the phone and talk to each other as a real live human conversation to work through difficult issues together. As we move kind of past some of the soft side elements of this, and we get into some of the provisions for helping growers, especially better ensure payment for the grapes they've delivered, I just wanted to flag too. If you've got questions, you can feel free to populate those on the Beacon Live web seminar technology there, and we'll see those and take up as many as we can at the end of the presentation. So as I mentioned, obviously that one of the key things for payment is just to articulate real clear payment terms language, and it doesn't have to be fancy. You know, here's a couple samples that payment in full is due more than, you know, X days after delivery. Often in grape contracts, we see that actually broken out over time. Maybe a certain amount is due within 30 days, another amount is due 60 days, and the balance in 90 days, or, you know, any scenario like that. One thing that's common in a lot of industries, and I'm seeing a little bit more of it in the grape industry, but actually a prompt payment encouragement by granting a prompt payment discount. So these are called, this example is a 2% 10 net 45, or sometimes you see a net 30 term, where if payment is in full, is made within 10 days of delivery of the invoice, the buyer can take a 2% discount off it. That just gets your cash in the door sooner. And if you've got folks who later might be counting pennies in order to pay all their growers or other obligations, you'd be glad you took an option like this. You can play with the numbers, obviously, but it's a convenient strategy. Most importantly, though, is both sides are really clear about when payment is due. And even if you're counting days, is it the number of days after delivery of the grapes? If it is delivery of the grapes, is it the first delivery, the last delivery, the first or last delivery of a particular variety, if you're selling more than one variety? Just be real clear about those elements. We talked about at the top that the law and the Uniform Commercial Code won't presume certain things about your contract if you don't spell it out in a written agreement. And one of those is the availability of interest and penalties if payment is late. So as between two parties who are commercial interests, a late fee or penalties and interest will only can only really be added to an obligation that's owing if it was part of the contract for the sale of those goods, in this case, the sale of the grapes. So again, here's a couple examples of language that we see quite commonly in, you know, a number of contracts. Pretty simple. I note in the second example there, we make it permissive because, you know, we find often that if someone communicates early, maybe just misses by a couple days, the parties don't necessarily impose interest after all, but they certainly reserve the right to in the event of extremely delinquent account. But the important thing is, again, if this isn't in your contractual terms or agreed to by the parties, it can be very difficult to collect interest unless, again, it's a subsequent modification to the contract that both parties have agreed. Similarly, should collection efforts be necessary, or at least the threat of collection efforts be necessary, it's very common for parties to want to seek an outcome that has the prevailing party being awarded its attorney's fees. However, you generally, again, in a commercial contract setting, can't recover your attorney's fees unless the parties agreed as a part of the contract that they could. So here's a couple sample provisions, again, you could include in a contract that just says that, you know, costs for collection, including attorney's fees, can be added to the amount owed. And this just helps shift the burden of and shift the expense of a delinquent payment or a fight over payment to the party who is at fault, and can tend to keep people honest about settlement language too, rather than, you know, deducting from what otherwise might be owed the amount that they think the party who's owed the funds would otherwise be willing to accept. It is really designed to make a party completely whole. Both the attorney's fees language and the interest language also serve to kind of keep the stack of bills, keep the growers' invoices in the stack of bills that the parties will pay, or certainly will pay as soon as the winery has cash to pay those bills, and gets them out of the stack of bills that are more easy to ignore. And I always kind of think of someone sitting down to pay their bills monthly, having about three stacks, a stack of bills that they have to pay no matter what. You know, that's payroll and taxes most likely. In the middle is a stack of bills they'd like to pay as soon as they have cash to do so. And then the third stack is, the stack of bills that is fairly easy to ignore. And unfortunately for some wineries, the stack of bills that are grape obligations that don't include interest in attorney's fees language or real sharp terms end up in that third stack that's easy for them to ignore. And in order to keep this industry moving forward positively, it's important that that those obligations are made when they are promised. Another tool that can be helpful to vineyard owners who might have multiple contracts with the same winery, or maybe selling multiple varieties under different contracts to the same growers to the same winery, is to include cross-default language. And a sample cross-default language would look something like this. If the buyer fails to make a payment to the seller within, so many days of the agreed date, then the seller has the right not only to terminate sales of that under that contract for that variety, but also sales under any other agreements that the same parties have together. And this, we've seen instances where maybe there's a less desired contract from the winery's perspective for, maybe it's a less popular variety or at pricing that's not in favor, but they still really like the most premium Pinot Noir fruit at a good price under the other contract. So what this is saying is that if they terminate, or if they breach under one of the contracts that may now be less desirable, it would allow the seller to terminate even that Pinot Noir contract perhaps that the parties really liked. That's just a favorable tool to help you move the invoice for that fruit to the stack of bills. It's more likely to get paid. Item number three, then, as we're moving towards the top of tools for growers to collect, is to use agricultural lien rights for leverage. And state legislatures, and later you'll see the federal government, have acknowledged that growers of fresh produce, and wine grapes included, have really limited opportunities once they've committed to deliver their product to a buyer. And the buyer is, in order to avoid the buyers changing terms at the last minute when the seller has no options, the legislatures and just about every state have given growers certain rights to protect payment, the right to collect payment for the ag products that they've delivered to processors. In Oregon, the statutory grower lien is called an agricultural produce lien. And this lien grants the seller, in this case of grapes, a security interest in the inventory and proceeds of the winery that received their grapes. That lien arises just by operation of law upon delivery of the grapes to the name place or to the name buyer. But in order to perfect and hold those rights, the seller is obligated to file and record with the Secretary of State a form that's called the APL1, and there's a identification there of the website where you can identify that form. You have to do that within 45 days after whatever was the last date due under the agreed contract terms. If you do that, and if you also notify other secured creditors who have an interest in the inventory and proceeds, so most importantly, that might be the wineries, banks, or other major creditors. If you file that form and then also notify secured creditors within 20 days of filing the form, then you actually have priority as the grower over all those other secured creditors and are in the first place to receive payment. Now, that first place right expires within 225 days if you don't act on it by either foreclosing interest or just putting enough pressure on that you get paid. In our experience, the notice to secured creditors or even the threat of the obligation to have to provide notice to those other secured creditors can quite frequently get a grower paid for their fruit, even without ever having to file the lien or making a formal demand. But you need to show that you know how to use these rights and that you intend to, and that in order to protect your business and your other stakeholders, you intend to do so. Again, the lien itself isn't an action to collect, but it preserves your priority position to collect it. Other states that Oregon growers are doing business with as well have similar statutes. This is the language in Washington, which actually has two that you can avail yourself of. There's a processor's lien and also a wine producer lien. Similarly, it gives you a right in the winery's inventory and accounts receivable. In the case of the Washington processor's lien, you have to file within 20 days after the default, so that would be the first default. And in the case of a wine producer's lien, you actually get up to 60 days after default, so that one extends the time just a bit. You use the UCC form at the link I provided there. And then, again, you get priority over other secured creditors in the event of this loan. It expires after 12 months if you don't affect it. Moving on, also, California has a similar provision. Here, though, there's no filing required for priority, although you may do so using the California standard UCC form, and I think it's a good idea to put the world on notice that you claim this priority position. It expires in 2 years if there wasn't a written contract about the payment, and again, it provides similar inventory and accounts receivable, and again, we find as a best practice it's important to go ahead and file that so banks and others can see your priority position, and then you need to really stay on the winery that owes you money for the grapes to make sure that they're aware of that priority position and you do get paid. There's a similar federal provision out there called PACA, or the Perishable Agricultural Commodity Act. PACA does a number of things. It provides fair trading terms between buyers and sellers of fresh produce, and again, wine grapes are fresh produce. And it provides a lot of default terms, and in fact, if there is no contract, PACA under federal law would presume if the parties haven't agreed on payment that payment is due within 10 days after delivery. But most importantly, for the purposes of this conversation, PACA provides a statutory trust that exists by operation of law to ensure that sellers of fresh produce get paid. Now, you can only avail yourself of PACA statutory trust protection as a seller if the agreed payment terms do not exceed more than 30 days from the date the produce is delivered. Also, you have to preserve your rights by either giving a specific written notice that you're doing so within 30 days of the default, or by including it on invoice language if you are licensed under PACA as a seller. Now, growers selling only their own fruit do not have to be licensed under PACA. If you're selling someone else's fruit or brokering someone else's fruit, you do have to be licensed under PACA. So most wine grape growers selling their own fruit aren't licensed and do need to deliver a specific written notice that they're preserving their PACA rights. And then if you've done everything right, you have a PACA-compliant transaction, and you've preserved your rights, then you become a beneficiary of the statutory trust, and you have a priority in all of the trust assets. Again, really inventory and accounts receivable of the winery. And this is kind of the ultimate protection, because in the event, say, of a bankruptcy even of a winery, the trust assets aren't even really considered part of the bankruptcy estate. Typically, the bankruptcy court administers it, but they deal and dispose of the statutory trust to get growers paid out of the statutory trust before administering items with the rest of the secured creditors. So whether it's the ag liens or the statutory trust, these are really important cards you can play, but the courts require you to play them perfectly to kind of jump ahead of all these other creditors who may be otherwise dealing with the same winery, whether selling them equipment or providing them lines of credit or long-term capital for their business. Under PACA, if you are a licensed seller, you can just include this language that's on the slide here that comes right out of the federal regulations, and USDA maintains a really good website about PACA and the PACA Trust. This you have to use this exact language on your invoice if you're a licensed seller. If you're providing a PACA written PACA notice, there's just a few key provisions you have to provide. You don't file this anywhere. You may share it with USDA, but most importantly, you have to sell it. You provide it directly to the buyer who owes you money. I want to back up also to the eligibility of your transaction for the trust. You might look at this first line here about payment terms not more than 30 days from delivery and say, well, that never happens. But there are some tricks you can play here. Rather than say on those contracts maybe that split out payments in a third and strings those out over a period of time, rather than saying 33% of the total sum due is owed within 30 days of delivery and then the next payments subsequent to that, you can write your contract such that the first, one-third, say, of the fruit delivered, for that first one-third of the fruit, payment is due within 30 days, and then at least that first payment is subject to PACA. So again, if you write it as to the delivery and the portion of the making at least a portion of the contract subject to the trust, rather than taking the whole contract out of the trust by dividing that up by dollars instead of the tonnages or the amounts delivered. And then the last thing, you might find it strange for a lawyer to say, but really lawyer up, but only if you have to. If you've taken all these intermediate steps as a business person, and you can certainly get advice behind the scenes from good counsel to help you understand how to take advantage of these various contractual tools and statutory lien rights or your PACA rights. But if you're still not getting paid, then it makes sense to go to a lawyer that can help you collect. And you know, a lot of general counsel do that, will do that. There's also specialists in collection who will be happy to chase amounts for you. So, you know, here's a sample lawyer letter can reflect that, you know, the demand and be real firm and clear about when payment's due, and if it's not forthcoming, then you go ahead and pursue legal action, and including interest and attorney's fees, presuming that was part of the contract. And your lawyer can certainly do that. Some of the correspondence prior to that might also reflect your right to enforce a lien and your obligation to notify the other secured creditors if you're not paid. In summary here then, this is kind of our top 10 list. Again, choose good buyers, so focus on those relationships and making sure you build good relationships and choose good ones to enhance over time. And you enhance them with good, clear written contracts. Make sure you're clear about the payment terms and other expectations for the delivery of fruit. Include interest and attorney's fees if you want to use those as tools to get paid and get paid sooner. Include cross-default language if you have multiple contracts with the same buyers, just to ensure that you can use the leverage of all of your crop if that's appropriate. Know your rights for the various agricultural liens, both in Oregon and in states where you're delivering fruit or where your growers or your wineries are receiving fruit. Understand PACA and see if that's a tool that you can use based on the terms of your contract, and then lawyer up, but only if you have to. And that's the summary of the things we wanted to cover. If there's any questions, feel free to type them in now, and we'll hang on the line for a bit and see if any come through. Okay, I know that the system's working because I just got a thank you, and you're welcome. I appreciate everybody for participating. I'll hang on the line for about one more minute to see if there's any questions. If there aren't questions, you can certainly also reach out to me at Davis Wright Tremaine. My email is jesselyon@dwt.com. My direct dial number is 503-778-5268. I will also put in a plug for OWA's resource database for those of you that are OWA members, and we are recording the session. I see a question from John. We are recording the session, and I believe OWA will make it available on the website, and we can get that to you. Another question, will the list or these slides be available offline? And yes, we can make those available to you through the OWA website. Another good question coming through, does the list change if you're a winery looking for grapes to buy? And I think the answer is no, not really. It's just the reverse order, just a little bit the reverse perspective. The contracting clearly is essential from both perspectives. And a lot of these same provisions about good contracting practices and maintaining the relationships, by the way, go the same for wineries and their relationship with distributors. And we could even do a talk at a future date maybe about wineries and getting distributors, because sometimes I think the number one reason that growers have a hard time collecting from wineries sometimes is the fact that wineries are having a hard time collecting from their far-off distributors. And I do have confirmation from OWA that the reference toolbox will house a recording of the information and these slides as well. Are there any other questions today? If not, then we'll leave it to the coordinators of the technology to sign off. Please come see me at the Oregon Wine Industry Symposium. If I don't see you sooner, Davis Wright Tremaine will have a booth there, and you can find me there, ask for me there, and we'll make sure to connect. But thank you all for your time, and hope to see you soon.
Thank you. And this concludes today's webinar. Thank you for attending. Everyone have a great day.